end it after the shove it, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolph Fan UK podcast. Lee and I are looking slightly tanned. I don't think you're that tanned, are you, mate? You look a bit, are you tanned? I don't really know.
No, because I spent most of the time sitting inside.
So that's probably fair enough. Well, I have not got a tan either because I've spent most of the time sat in the car. But we're both back from Miami, both in very good spirits and obviously joined by Si as well. How are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, good, thanks. And I just want to wish everyone a happy Miami Miracle Day because we're recording this on Thursday the 9th. 3 years ago today, the Miami Miracle happened. And of course, everyone's just lightly heard it anyway in the intro.
Yeah, good bit of nostalgia there. But yeah, well, we've got a good interview with one of the Miami Herald's beat writers coming up. We will kind of jump to that in a bit. But first, it'd be good to chat through the New York game and Lee and I can give some stories from our trip to Miami, no doubt, and we'll look forward to a bye week where we can relax in a 5-game win streak, can't we? So not bad at all. Lee, kick it your way first, mate. How was your week in Florida?
My week in Florida was brilliant because going to Florida is always brilliant. I don't think I've ever had a bad time, so, but it's always better when the Dolphins win. So, you know, to be honest, I know I've said it on here before. There is just, and I think, Andy, you actually mentioned it later in our interview, there is something better. There's just something about being at Hard Rock that is completely different to being at a London game. And I much prefer it. And I know that's a super privileged thing to say because I'm lucky enough to have been to both. So, you know, I understand that. But the whole experience is just so different because it's all Miami fans. And I just love that. I love pulling up to the car park and seeing people just having a great time ready for it. It's that truly kind of Christmas for football fans kind of experience, but every time. I think, I don't know, it's just great. It's great to see people having time. And obviously it helps that we've gone midway through a winning streak. Obviously this might have been a bit different a few weeks ago, but
yeah, that's it. That's it. And to be fair, all the games I've been to before have been like either the last game or the second to last game of the season when the Dolphins are kind of already done for the year, because we always used to have to go on like in school holidays with the wife being the teacher. But now she's moved professions, you can actually see a meaningful game. And it was a good atmosphere, like you say. I must admit, I had a slightly different experience when I pulled up, mate, because it was just New York Giants fans and more New York Giants fans. We got out of the car and some guy just yelled at me, like, saying I was in enemy territory, got a full Dolphins gear on. So that was how, like, stacked the free parking lots were with Giants fans anyway. So that was good fun. But the atmosphere, like you say, was just very different. Kind of half Dolphins, half Giants. The Giants sideline was definitely majority Giants fans. So that's interesting. But just like a kind of normal home game for any kind of English football team as well. So it's good atmosphere like that. And I probably enjoyed it. As you say, mate, didn't enjoy the hotel, which I've already talked to the lads about. But all I'm going to say is if you go to Miami, spend a bit of money on a hotel that is like just a bit better. Just don't try and cheap out of the hotel because like it's just not worth it, lads. I tell you that for free. So don't do that. But other than that, I had a great time. We were on the beach and at Hollywood Beach on the boardwalk there, as they call it, not the boardwalk. And, you know, loads of drinks and sand. And I got up and watched the sunset every morning. So that was absolutely fantastic. So can't go
just to get out of your hotel room, Andy, just so you can go and see the sunset.
The first day it was, to be honest, mate. Yeah. So, but it did look very good. And we also got caught in a tropical storm, which was that was crazy, wasn't it, Lee? That brief storm, the water was like knee high. It's trying to get normally I upgrade to a truck. And I didn't do it this time. I had some epoxy little Nissan, and the water was like above the license plate. I was thinking, God, like, is this thing going to get through it? But thankfully, it did. Go on, sir.
That tropical storm that you referred to, Andy, are you sure it wasn't the burst pipe that was in the hotel?
It could have been that as well. Yeah, imagine combining the two when you got back to your hotel. It was fun.
Was it any sense, Sinatra?
No, it was a Nissan Vertra. Vertra, something like that. I can't remember. But, yeah. Anyway, good time was had by all. Ate too much. Too many donuts. Just Dunkin' Donuts is just my thing. I don't like when you go in there. All the Americans are just like look really unimpressed. But I just love it. Selection is great.
Quick story: we got through. We're getting through passport control in Miami to fly back, and I get a message from Andy saying, "Is there a Dunkin' Donuts through there?"
There wasn't after Dunkin' Donuts. That's gutted because I was going to buy some Dunkin' Donuts merchandise, but we ended up with a Starbucks Miami mug instead. Talking of merchandise, I'm going to hold up a picture which I will tweet as well afterwards. But did you know in the club shop at the Dolphins, you can buy a cat jersey? And there you go. There is. I'll tweet it as well. But got the cat jersey, got it on. Just everything you could possibly want in there, apart from the T-shirt that you wanted, Si, which I did 3 laps of the shop for. Couldn't see anywhere, so apologies about that, mate.
That's all right, no worries. And that cat picture is just perfect, really, isn't it?
Oh, stop it. God's sake. Anyway.
Knew it was coming.
It was coming. The game itself, Lee, I'll toss it your way for some takeaways. I won't say what I thought because you're going to lead off.
You go.
I thought it was one of those games which was kind of inevitable that the Dolphins were going to win, even from like the first drive that the Giants had. They just didn't seem to have a lot to threaten us. So, you know, a couple of decent plays by them, a couple of third downs they converted really well, which got the Giants fans in the stadium very excited. But I just got the impression that it was just always going to turn in our favour, and I think it did.
Yeah, I mean, I never felt at any stage that the game felt... It didn't feel as close as the score as it was on the scoreboard, even at 10-3. You know, I watched the game back last night and it seemed like the Dolphins could have turned the screw really at any point they wanted to. And it was the lack of urgency that kind of let the game kind of drag the way it did a little bit. Kind of in the middle there, you know, where the Dolphins are kind of close to completing some third downs, it kind of stalled drives. You know, there was no real desperation going. I think they felt the desperation because, like you say, the Giants really had nothing to hurt them with, unless even with a Saquon Barkley in there. You know, I think that they felt comfortable. I thought they played a good game, actually, a good complimentary game kind of throughout.
I always felt the Dolphins were in a position to step up a gear if they needed to. I think it was so comfortable in a way that they didn't really need to exert any real pressure offensively because they always had the game under control, I felt. And the Giants, like you say, were never really in it. But clearly the Dolphins had another gear which they didn't need to go into.
I'd love to know what we would have thought if someone had shown us this podcast 8 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's crazy how much time things would change, isn't it? But I just thought they were... it helped that they had their backup quarterback in, didn't it? And although I didn't think he started badly at all, Mike Glennon, as soon as he got picked off, great interception by X, by the way, definitely wasn't down by contact. Let me just say that. I thought that was fairly obvious from up in the seats, to be fair. Lee, you disagree?
Yeah, I actually thought, watching the replays, I thought he was down by contact. Oh, but, really? But actually, you were closer to that than I was. I was the other end of the stadium.
Yeah, so I didn't think it immediately, but yeah, great play.
As soon as Glennon dropped back, you could see what he was going to do, and you could see he was in an awful lot of trouble. A chap that was sitting next to me called Brandon, I believe, shouted the words "Pick City" as soon as he like kind of lined up to throw it, and he was like, you look up and you suddenly see his ex and Javon Holland back there. You're like, yeah, this, you know, there's no way this ends well for him. And to be honest, It was funny because the Giants kind of got out of that little bit of trouble because he threw the pick, but because of where they spotted that ball inside the five, the Dolphins didn't move the ball and actually gave the Giants good field position that led to a field goal. So, I mean, technically, he's probably the Giants' most impressive offensive player of the day.
What, the interception?
The interception. I mean, hey, it helped them get better field position and basically the offense did the rest of the game. So, you know, I thought the Dolphins were unlucky. The Giants were lucky, whichever way, I suppose, depends which team you're a fan of. Although Xavier Howard and Javon Holland cost each other a couple more interceptions as well, actually. And it's one of those games that could easily have got out of control had they picked those off. And I'm not complaining that they're in position to break up passes together. That's not a problem for me. But yeah, I thought there was a couple of instances, one in the end zone as they were coming back the other way in the second half, that say either of them could have picked off, but instead they ended up breaking it up and then kind of looking at each other like, you're in my way. So,
yeah. Question for you, actually, Lee. You had the honour this time of seeing the game live, seeing the TV replays, and having the advantage of thoughts from other people sat around you in the press box. I just wondered what you thought of having all of those different perspectives coming together at the same time. What was it like having all of that? Obviously, watching on TV at home, or you, like I was, you don't get that, like sitting in the stands. Obviously, Andy had the atmosphere, but not the TV, but you literally had everything. How did that feel watching the game this week?
I'll tell you, it's a really interesting comparison, and I'll be honest, I could probably sit here and do an entire podcast just comparing watching the game from the press box at Spurs and then doing it in Miami, because they're very, very different experiences. You can barely hear the crowd. When the crowd really got rocking there in the kind of third quarter and in the second half, you could hear it. But it still comes through as kind of a murmur. The press box is almost soundproof. It's also, you know, very quiet. A lot of people obviously working and doing stuff. You know, there's kind of like light chatter. And then there's a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not like a play-by-play, but there's an announcer in the box giving you all the information over an audio system, which is great. But it's great to have, you know, I had the Fox feed on one screen. I think one was the live Fox feed and one was the like real time Fox feed. There was two feeds, but they were coming through at different times, which meant you were actually able to watch the play, watch the replay, watch it again, and then watch the show replay it. So you were kind of able to watch stuff as much as you wanted or not. I must say in the first quarter, it was kind of overwhelming. There's a lot of information to take in. There's a lot of stuff going on, and I'd been running around the stadium doing lots of stuff beforehand where maybe I should have sat down and kind of taken a little bit more in to figure out what the best way to kind of watch the game was. But yeah, it's definitely a very different experience, and you could see the crowd getting loud, and you could see the Giants fans cheering in the first half, like you said, especially on that first drive when, you know, Booker made a good catch on third down on the first drive, and you know, you saw a lot of the Giants fans jump up. It's weird because you could see it, but you couldn't hear it. But yeah, really, really interesting experience. Giants media are not happy. They were not happy before the game. Their mood didn't improve during the game, and they weren't very happy after the game. And I walked past the Giants locker room, and that didn't seem like a fun place to be either.
Where were you sat in the press box, actually? Because when I went, I was literally almost opposite the tunnel, above the tunnel. But I saw a picture you shared, and it looked like you were behind the end zone. Does the press box literally go round the corner behind the end zone as well? Or
no? So there's a few different press boxes, depending on the kind of media that you are. I was in the same press box that you were. I was sitting right above the tunnel. The pitch you saw, I took when I was on my wander.
Okay.
So yeah, I was trying to get a kind of shot down the ground. I was also lucky enough to get down kind of onto the field to take some pictures. At field level as well. So it was, yeah, that was just a case of me moving around, but I was in the same place. I sat in the press box, is actually in three rows. As you know, I was sitting in the back row of that. So I was kind of looking over other people. To be honest, it's a great view. I remember we mentioned on the podcast a long time ago, where's your favorite place to sit and watch a game? The first time I ever went to watch a game and where I used to kind of sit was right above that in the stadium. It was that corner view. Looking across the field at a diagonal. So, I enjoyed that angle watching the game for sure. But yeah, really, really great experience. And also I want to say thank you to the Dolphins for allowing me to do that. You know, it's not something that everyone gets to do. And I, you know, fully appreciate the fact that they did that. Got to have some nice food before the game and then during the game, which was great. Got to meet Travis Wingfield for the first time in person. we've done some work together and stuff in the past and chatted a lot. It's just nice to actually to meet him. And then had this kind of weird moment where I was sitting on a table having something to eat opposite Drew Rosenhouse. So I was like, this is just weird, you know? So, but yeah, an awesome experience.
I can't believe you said, Si, that Lee benefited from the insight of people around him as if the people around me. Throw me the ball, Mike. Every time I said it was on a drive, it wasn't insightful. But the Giants fan next to me was telling me that Tua can't progress through his reads in any way, just as he went to his third read and hit Devontae Parker down the sideline. So that was particularly sweet. But
probably one of Logan Ryan's family, sorry.
Exactly that, yes. Stadium food. Did you get any stadium? You mentioned you got food. What did you get in the press box?
I had like chicken and chips in the press box at halftime. I didn't have anything before the game. There was nice food there. I didn't have it because, to be honest, I'm not sure if you're supposed to, but I took my camera out, went running around taking pictures of stuff whilst I was able to, because it was just a cool experience, to be honest. And then afterwards, after the game, whilst I didn't have access for the press conferences afterwards, I was able to watch them from the box, and they bring up pizzas, which is awesome because I love pizza. So
very nice. Yeah, I was going to say we have the chicken and chips in there. The wife always gets the souvenir cup as well, which is proper annoying because just like, what's the point in paying like $15 for a cup and then she only had one drink? it's not even getting the benefits. So anyway, but it's just a great experience all around. Love the kind of walk over there. We've always parked by the Walmart on the other side, so the walk over there, it's just like you can see the Formula One track being built, and kind of weaving its way through the car park, which is a surreal experience when you stand on like the third deck of the stadium and kind of look down. You can see the Formula One track, but it's still marked out with car parking spaces, so it's very weird. You can see the outline, but everyone's parked on it, so that'll be a really interesting thing to see how they kind of prepare that for the races and stuff there. But yeah, really just all around top experience, isn't it, to be fair? So it's really good game day.
Topped off, Lee, by you mentioned you went on the field at the end after the game. And did you bring back some grass? And I mean the grass from the field.
No, I didn't, because I was being watched and to be honest, I wasn't sure if I was supposed to be there. I was trying to behave. And then at the last moment, I saw Tua walk out onto the field to take a phone call, which was just interesting watching him. It wasn't the same as that first game where, you know, people had pictures of him sitting in the middle of the field kind of taking phone calls. But yeah, he'd come out after doing the national media press conference and coming back out, and I don't know, he was just taking a phone call on the field, which is just interesting to see him kind of walking around and doing a few things. I mean, everything was awesome. And I think the thing I realize is how privileged some of the people that are in there that you really don't feel appreciate the position that they're in. You know, that's a once in a lifetime thing for me. And I really appreciate that. But you definitely got the feeling that some people take that stuff for granted.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? But I suppose it's literally a day job for some people, isn't it? So it's strange, isn't it?
That's the thing that we were talked about when I went 3 years ago, actually. We were saying respect the media because it is their job. Don't bombard them with questions. Let them have the first set of interviews in the locker room afterwards because they've got deadlines to write, to meet. So it was always a case of having to respect them and because they're working. Having said that, I had a really good chat with Omar Kelly after the game, just myself and Peter who went along. He was quite happy to chat for a few minutes, even though he was working. Adam Beasley was in the lift going up after the press conferences, and he was just normal, having a joke and a laugh. And even Mando in the press box during the game was laughing and joking with everyone at one point. So whilst you do give them that respect, they are humans after all, and they were happy to interact.
It was like a good segue, Si, into the next section. There we go. Which, we've interviewed Daniel from the Miami Herald. So we'll kick off and leave that with you.
Absolutely delighted to welcome to the show now Miami Dolphins beat writer from the Herald, Daniel. Oye Fusey, and I hope I pronounced your surname right. Daniel, welcome to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. You're close enough. You got it. I've heard way worse pronunciations, so you got it. Thank
you. Excellent. We obviously first met in London, Daniel, myself and Lee, at the Dolphins Media Day. So I just want to touch on your trip to London, actually, before we kick into the real Dolphins stuff. What were your experiences of coming over to London, following the Dolphins, and what did you make of the trip?
No, it was great. It was great. You know, when I took the job and I, relocated from Maryland to Miami, Florida, a couple of weeks into it, I got a question. Do you have your passport? And I was like, my passport? He said, yeah, you're going to London. And that's when I realized, oh, wait, they do play overseas. So I was definitely looking forward to it. It was a really nice, really nice trip. I got there Friday morning, went straight to practice. And then, I got Saturday off to kind of explore a little bit. And I did one of the nighttime bus tours. So that was really nice. And just to go around and see all the different monuments and all the tourist spots. And then obviously on Sunday, when you get to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I mean, it was just, it was an experience, I didn't know how state of the art and how new the stadium is. So that was amazing seeing inside, seeing outside. Once you get there and it's a little different. The press seating's a little different there than it is over in the States. You guys are a lot closer to all the action. So it's like you could really hear and feel the atmosphere and the crowd whenever there was a touchdown or a big play. So I really had a good time over there.
I was just going to say that answers my question about whether this is your first trip if it was your first trip to London or not. But I've got to agree with you. Like, I mean, the having been in the press box in Miami at the weekend, you can't. It drowns out so much of the sound. It's really incredible. So yeah, Tottenham must have been a really interesting experience.
No, most definitely. And it actually wasn't even my first actual trip to London. You know, when I was really young, I went with my family, but that had been so long. I barely recalled anything. So it was really good to be older and to be able to go out on that tour and to look around and take a couple photos and everything. So I really had a lot of fun.
Are you a soccer fan as well? Any kind of football or British football team that you support at all?
Not really. You know, whenever the World Cup comes around, I'm Nigerian. Both my parents are from Nigeria. So whenever the World Cup comes around, I start rooting for the Super Eagles. But outside of that, not too much.
That's quality, man. I enjoy watching the African Cup of Nations as well. They're just the Nigerian team always play great football. So can't complain about that, can you? Si, go on.
You mentioned, Daniel, that it's your first year on the Dolphins beat, and obviously you've now been around the team every day on and off throughout from the very start of pre-season through their bad 1-7 start, and the team now find themselves obviously on the verge of 500 if they can win their next game against the Jets. Just wondered if you could talk to us about the vibe of the team throughout that bad 1-7 start compared to what it is currently in terms of on the back of a 5-game winning streak. Do you get a sense of that vibe and the change in vibe being around the team every day?
No, most definitely. You know, anytime you go through a long losing streak like that, you're not going to be happy. And, talking to players, talking to coaches, nobody was happy about that. But I think that there was still a collective togetherness. The team stood together. They said multiple times, we're close, we're close, we're close. And if you look back at it, I mean, they were close. That game in London against the Jaguars, that's they're a kick away from winning that game. If you look at the Atlanta Falcons game the week after, they're a kick away from winning that game. Even the Raiders game a couple weeks before that, they were a couple plays or a kick away from winning that game. So they were close. And so while nobody was happy about it, they really thought that they could turn it around, which to most people on the outside, we thought that was crazy. And for them to now win 5 straight games, you definitely see the mood change from whether it's practice, whether it's on the field during games, whether it's in the media news conferences. I mean, they're happy, they're smiling, they're cracking jokes. There is definitely a uplift in the mood. And, of course, when you're winning, on the flip side, when you're losing, you're not going to be very happy. But when you're winning, of course, everyone's going to be a lot happier. And you definitely see that in just the normal interactions and the day-to-day interactions.
You mentioned they're close. Or they thought they were close, but what has actually been the catalyst, you think, to tip them over the edge and go on this winning streak? Was there any noticeable change that you think caused them to effectively switch from going losing every week to winning every week?
Yeah, it's the question. It's like the million-dollar question. It's the question that we've been asking every single week. How did you turn it around, and why weren't you doing this earlier in the season? And whoever you ask, I mean, they might point out different things, but they say it was no one thing. There was no one thing. I think it was a mixture of things. Obviously, I have to start with, you know, Tua Tagovailoa coming back from injury. I mean, there's no doubt that when he's in the lineup, this offense is so much better. And obviously, when he immediately came in the Jacksonville game and the Atlanta game and the Buffalo game, he wasn't able to completely turn things around because he's a young quarterback. So you don't expect him to fix everything all himself. But I think that as he's far removed from that rib injury, from that finger injury, he's gotten more comfortable, more healthy, more confident. That's one thing that players have said. He's more confident, and he kind of understands what's on the field. He's taking care of the ball. And then really, to me, it's the play of the defense. I think that there were a lot of changes in terms of the scheme and what they were trying to do early on in the season. You know, they had some new players that they were trying to fit in there, notably the rookies, Javon Holland and Jalen Phillips. But I feel like everyone has kind of settled into those roles, and now they're doing what they did last year, which is blitz, be aggressive, pressure the quarterback, take the ball away, and, you know, over the past, you know, really over the course of the winning streak, the defense has been really probably the best defense in the NFL. They're only allowing 11 points per game. And when you do that, the margin of error is so wide. You can get away with so much stuff. You can get away with the offense that's maybe not, you know, as dynamic as other teams in the NFL. And that's what we're seeing now.
Do you think Brian Flores is having more of a input into the way the defense plays? He seems to be more active. I know he's denied it, but I don't believe him.
I know. Every single week we see him with a play sheet and he's saying words into the headset, and it fuels more fire to the rumors. And if you ask him, he'll say no. You know, I think that he's actually gone out of his way in recent weeks to give credit to the defensive coordinator, Josh Boyer. He did defend the play sheet stuff by saying, he said, I have an offensive play sheet, I have a defensive play sheet, I have a special teams play sheet. I do think that, I mean, obviously he has his hand. I mean, this is, although Josh Boyer is the defense coordinator, this is Brian Flores' defense. So if he thinks that some changes should be made or they should be playing a certain way, he's going to let that be known. And you're very certain that they're going to make some changes. So I can't say for sure that he's calling the plays. He'll deny it till the end of the season. But of course he has his hand in that defense. And I think obviously he deserves some credit too.
Yeah, it definitely seemed... He definitely seemed more prevalent with that play sheet, and then and more talking the better this defense has got.
Yes, I've seen the videos every single week. Yeah, I know.
We've been talking in recent weeks about the kind of core of the defense being so young. Obviously, that's such a good thing. But do you think there's one of the rookies that's like particularly stood out to you, or do you think they come as a kind of collective unit?
I wouldn't say they come as a collective unit, but I think that they've impressed me in different ways. I mean, if you look at Javon Holland, he was a guy that before I even got to Miami, they were raving about him and talking about how he's been making plays. And for him to kind of, you know, supplant Eric Rowe and Jason McCourty and some of those veterans, and to be like an every down player, and he can do it all. He can cover, he can tackle, he can blitz, he's smart. They talk about how he's so knowledgeable and he's good at getting the different calls to all the players. So that's really impressed me, because when you play safety, that's kind of every position you have to be smart, but you really have to know the defense when you're at safety and you're kind of the overseer of the last line of defense. But then when you look at Jalen Phillips, you know, he was also like a physical marvel, and they talked about how he was fast, he was strong, and it kind of took a couple weeks for him to get it together. But lately, he's just been on a roll. So it's like you might talk about this later on, but I know Chris Greer, the general manager, has gotten so much criticism because of some draft misses here and there. But I mean, when you look at the 2021 draft, they've hit. The first three picks are all hits: Jalen Waddle, Jalen Phillips, Javon Holland. Those are all hits, and you know, for Javon and Jalen to be so instrumental in that defense. I mean, I don't think anybody could have imagined that both of them would be playing like this in their rookie season. So this defense would not be what it is. They wouldn't have turned things around if it's not for, in part, Jalen and Javon.
You mentioned Waddle there. Sorry, Lee.
I know. I was just going to say, it just seems like the Jason McCourty injury was kind of not, you don't want to see anyone get hurt, but it almost
a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Just it kind of forces you to let the rookie play more. You know, you've kind of taken that safety blanket away. safety yeah. blanket. Simon, you love that pun. But sorry, go on, man.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to talk, Daniel, you mentioned about Waddle. And he's now obviously got that really good rapport going with Tua, which is a nice segue into my next question about Tua himself. We've discussed his role on the team to depth in depth as whether we think he's that franchise quarterback or not. And I think it's fair to say we're probably in the pro Tua corner. I was listening to your pod earlier today, actually, and you talked about Tua in depth. So for those that haven't yet listened to that, could you share with us your thoughts on Tua and his development? And do you think he's the franchise quarterback the Dolphins have been searching for a long time? What are your thoughts on Tua there, Daniel?
Yeah, so when I quickly came over to this beat, I quickly realized how divisive and polarizing Tua is. I had not known that at all. If you say one bad thing about Tua, you're gonna have an army on you. If you say one good thing about Tua, you're gonna have an army on you. So I watch my words carefully when I speak and when I write. But I will say, and what I've been saying through the entirety of the Deshaun Watson reports and rumors and the trade deadline stuff, I always thought that not taking into account the Watson situation, always thought that we should practice patience when it came to Tua. Now, I understand that that's very tough for a franchise to do, especially one that's been starving for a quarterback the way the Miami fan base has. But I always thought we should preach patience. And from what I've seen, when he's healthy, I've continued to say, I think he's performing in spite of everything around him, not because of everything around him. So when I say that we know that the offensive line is young and has struggled. We know that he doesn't have much of a running game. And we know that a lot of his wide receivers have been in and out of the lineup, whether that's Preston Williams, Devontae Parker, and Will Fuller, who's barely played the entire season. So to see him put up these numbers, I say he's doing this in spite of everything around him. And he's actually uplifting the pieces around him. And we always talk about him not throwing down the field. And, you know, I pointed that out. I would like to see more explosive plays. I would like to see him throw the ball deeper down the field. But they've had so much success with the short passing game that I can only imagine what happens when they actually start to throw the ball downfield. You know, I see the potential there. Everyone complains about them throwing it deep, but that's working right now. That's working. I mean, it's not the greatest offense in the world, but it's serviceable with this defense. So just imagine when you have another offseason of him, and he's going to be more experienced. I mean, he's only going to get better. No, I mean, this isn't the best of Tua. I mean, you would hope it's not. He's going to get better as he gets older and sees more defenses. You would hope that next offseason they can get some more veteran offensive linemen, some better offensive linemen. You would hope that they can get add a running back or two, and you would hope that some of these wide receivers aren't as injured as often, or maybe they add another wide receiver. So I mean, he's just scratching the surface. You know, they're really catering to what he does well, which is get the ball out quick, and he's accurate. So they know that if he throws really quickly, it's going to get to the spot. So just imagine once he starts to get better himself and once they start to surround him with better talent. I really think that, you know, the sky's the limit for him in this offense. He might have some physical limitations. We know he's not the fastest guy out there. We know he's not the biggest guy out there, but he has a really, really defined skill set. So now it's up to the Dolphins to build around that and make the most of it.
I think the important thing is, like you say, what they're doing right now is playing great complementary football. That's all that matters, is that it balances itself out with, like you say, with the defense that's absolutely rolling. Like, that's the most important thing. Like Simon said, we're all Tua fans, I think, in here. But, you know, everything's going to get better. Like, I think he raises the ability of the wide receivers especially. So if they didn't add wide receivers, I still expect him to play well. It's just giving him time. Like, I would... Literally, if you took every draft pick and spent it on O-lineman next year, no problem. Spend all the money, spend all the picks. Just
they have a lot of money and a lot of picks. So
build a wall, and I'll be happy. You know, give him a chance. At least give him the chance to prove that he's not the guy. But you hit on something really important where he raises the talent level of players around him. And that's like the key thing that people mention when you talk about good quarterbacks in the NFL. It's the one thing that we haven't seen a quarterback do in Miami for such a long time. So by that token, he's doing everything you could possibly want him to do. You know, I like you say, is there improvements to be made? Yeah. But man, he's playing some good football.
He is. And again, I know that it's not flashy. And I think that's the thing for a lot of people. It's not flashy. He's not going to run around for 10 seconds and then throw the ball 50 yards down the field. He's not going to run past everyone like Lamar Jackson or anything like that, but it gets the job done. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the flash and the wow. And sometimes you just got to, it just matters that you get the job done. He's accurate. He's efficient. He plays well late in games. And that's what's really important as a quarterback. Of course, you'd like to have somebody that's big, strong, can throw the ball all the way down the field. But sometimes you have to just take what you have in a quarterback and get the most out of it. Will it be enough for them to win a Super Bowl? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Tua's ceiling is. You know, some people say that they think he can be like a top 15 to top 10 quarterback. Can you win a Super Bowl with that? Potentially, if you have the right pieces around him. But again, it's not a one man team. I know that the quarterback is the most important position, but rarely do you see a quarterback just carry an entire team to a Super Bowl by himself. I mean, even if you look at the past Super Bowl champions, if you look at last year with Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, I mean, they had a great defense. They had a really good running game that people don't want to give credit to, but they had a really good running game. Even if you go back to the Chiefs from the year before, Patrick Mahomes was great, but they had a pretty solid defense. They had pass rushers. So it's not just all on the quarterback. And a lot of times we put too much, quarterbacks are always going to get too much praise, or they're going to get too much criticism. It's just the nature of it. But you have to be fair with it.
You only have to look at this team's history to see how Marino's career played out. You know, it's not just on him. Do you know what I mean? It's not on any quarterback.
Quarterback can only take you so far, for sure.
That's right.
Quick question on Chris Greer, then, mentioned him earlier. Like at the start of the season, when it was all kind of going wrong on that losing streak, a lot of people calling for him to lose his job. I mean, do you think he'll be in charge of the next draft in Miami? And if so, if you're him, what's the position that you're looking to strengthen in the draft next year? We're already getting to that time of year where you're going to have a million mock drafts on your timeline, which is it's kind of, I love it, but I hate it as well. Cool, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly through that losing streak, I mean, I do a mailbag every week, and I received so many questions. When is Chris Greer getting fired? When is Chris Greer getting fired? And now I don't get any of those questions at all. and I do think that he'll be the GM next year. I think that for the most part, barring a collapse in the final four games, which I don't see. I mean, the schedule just kind of favors them too much, and they're playing too well right now. I don't see them really falling off. Maybe at the most losing one or two games. But I would expect Greer to be back. I would expect Ryan Forrest to be back. I would even probably expect the offensive coordinators to be back. Maybe they change the system and they anoint one person the offensive coordinator, but I would expect most of those key players to be back. With Greer, I mean, I think number one, of course, you got to fix the offensive line. I mean, you have to. You know, I'm of the mindset that you build the offensive line first and then let everything come into play. I know that a lot of people have been talking about getting a number one running back. And while that's good and all, I mean, I'm still of the mindset that if you put a really good five really good offensive linemen on the line of scrimmage and you have a good running system in place, you can put a lot of different running backs in there and have success. I believe in building kind of a wall first. Like you said, build the wall and then everything will follow suit. And then kind of secondary, of course, like I said, running back. But even so, I mean, probably you want to look into that wide receiver group. You know, we've seen way too often Tua relying on Mac Hollins and Albert Wilson and a lot of the tight ends. I know they like to use the tight ends, but and then that's not to say anything bad about Mac Hollins or Albert Wilson or even Isaiah Ford, because all those guys have stepped up and made plays recently. But you really do want to get a bona fide receiver to add to Jalen Waddle. And I would expect Devontae Parker to be back. I mean, a lot of people have talked about releasing him and kind of moving on from him, but they wouldn't get too much money. I mean, they're going to have $80 million or $75 million anyway. So what's keeping Devontae Parker for a couple mil and hoping he stays healthy? So definitely, I think this is really an offseason where you have to build that offense around Tua. I think the defense as it is, of course, you might want to add an extra linebacker or an extra cornerback or an extra defensive lineman just to add some depth. But I think the defense is really set. That's a really young core that you have right there. That group's going to be together for the next, you know, 3-4 years. But really, it's about making sure that in kind of year three of Tua, because it's going to be next year is going to be his third season. You know, time is flying. You really want to start building around him and try to see if you can maximize that rookie contract with all that excess money that you have.
I'm going to put you on the spot now, Daniel. Actually, before you go, Do you think the Dolphins are going to make the playoffs?
I have to say, I've been messing around with the playoff predictors and going scenario, doing different scenarios. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I think that we see a situation where they finish maybe 9-8. Even if they finish 10-7, I think they're going to need a lot of help, and they're going to need a lot of AFC teams to really fall off. You know, that the AFC, like from the second seed to the Dolphins, is just completely jumbled. I mean, they're only separated by 2 games. And there's a lot of teams in front of them that they're going to have to leapfrog. There's some teams that the Dolphins don't have the tiebreaker against. You know, if they have the same record as the Colts or the Raiders, those teams already beat the Dolphins, so they wouldn't get the head-to-head tiebreaker. So I think that ultimately they finished the year strong. If there's a game that I would say that I'm worried about, it might be that Titans game. Derrick Henry could be back. Some of their key players could be healthy. Obviously, the season finale against the Patriots is going to be a really important game. But I do think that they end the year strong. They might run the table, but even so, I think it might be too little too late.
I think Andy and I discussed on the show last week, actually, that we think, and I think Andy agrees, that we're probably going to be a game short of making the playoffs. And it's going back to that Jags game and that Falcons game and that Raiders game that you alluded to earlier, where they were so close to winning those games. And it wouldn't surprise me if the failure to win one of those three is going to cost them in the end.
Yeah. And one thing I will say is, while I think that would be a disappointment to a lot of fans, you know, to obviously the disappointment was losing 7 straight, but then to kind of like pull off this magical run and come up short, I think a lot of fans would be disappointed. But my whole thought process entering this season was that this season wasn't about the playoffs. It was about Tua and his development. So if Tua plays really well to end the season, and he's part of the reason why you're winning games, even if you don't make the playoffs and come up short, I think there's a lot to be excited about as a Dolphins fan. You can say, hey, our quarterback was injured for like 3, 4, 5 games. We had a really slow start to the first half of the season, but we have a quarterback we can build around. I think that that's more of a win and a success than a lot of people will think.
Great. You've been really generous with your time, Daniel. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Do you just want to give your podcast a plug and where we can find you on social media and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, of course. So if you want to, follow me on social media, you can find me anywhere at Daniel Oyefusi. That's DanielOyefusi. I know the spelling might trip up a few people, so I have to spell it out. And then obviously I record every week the Dolphins In Depth podcast. It goes up every Wednesday, wherever you get podcasts. So Apple, Spotify, you can go on the MiamiHerald.com, Miami Herald website at MiamiHerald.com and read it or listen to it there. And you can read my work there as well.
Awesome.
Thanks for your time, man.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, Daniel.
Great. Yeah, really, really, good to have Daniel's time there and really appreciate that. And as we kind of head into the bye week in a good mood, I think it's fair to say, isn't it? It's like Lee said earlier, a hell of a lot different to, 5 weeks ago. And we kind of asked Daniel there about what his sort of take was on whether the Dolphins could make the playoffs. But it'd be good to just touch on that again with the three of us now. I mean, you know, got a lot of momentum coming, but as Daniel said, it might be like a game or two short, etc. Sorry, you kind of said you think it will be a game too short, but do you think there's even a possibility that they can get in there if results go their way? I mean, and how do you think they would hold up if they can keep that momentum going?
I mean, they've got to win out. I think they've got to run the table and win every game, because I think one defeat is going to put them out of reach for the reasons that Daniel alluded to, in terms of that they don't have tiebreakers over a lot of the teams who currently sit above them. So I think they've definitely got a small chance. And obviously with each win, those chances increase. Clearly they're favoured to beat the Jets after the bye. The Saints aren't the Saints of old, obviously without Drew Brees and Taysom Hill. Don't get me started on Taysom Hill and Chris Sims, with that Pro Football Talk thing that you shared earlier, Lee. How ridiculous was that? For those that don't know, apparently Chris Sims thinks Taysom Hill is better than Tua, but let's not go there because it's not worth mentioning anymore. So clearly they're going to be in with a chance to win that game. The Titans game, again, without Henry, without Anton, what's his name, Brown, the receiver. the Dolphins are the form team, and it could all come down to that Patriots game in the last week of the season. But they got a chance.
Yeah, fingers crossed, man. I mean, it'd be really gutting to miss out by a game twice in a row, wouldn't it? Just but that being said, at least we'd be on again on an upward trend from earlier in the year. Lee, what's your take, mate? I mean, obviously saw them live the other day. You think this is a team that can break its way into the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, I still think they can. You know me, ever the optimist, but you know, I still think this team has reinforcements to come. I think I thought it was a brilliant time to get Devontae Parker back, to be able to get him to knock a bit of the rust off and then have the extra week's rest before having to play again, because we know, you know, that's Devontae Parker. He's going to have issues. That's, you know, but there's nothing wrong with that. I've got no problem because, you know, as we said earlier in the season, we had a conversation about, you know, is it worth trading him at the deadline? I think you can see how important he is to the team. I think not necessarily important to the team. I think you see what impact he has whilst he's on the field. That's the thing. They can win games without him, but I think it's certainly easier with him. Because he demands a certain level of coverage. You can't go too far down your depth chart covering Devontae Parker, even if I truly don't believe he's a number one. But I think he makes it awfully difficult if you've got someone playing as well as Jalen Waddle. You know, and then you know, you want to throw Mike Kosicki, even though he's kind of simmered the last few weeks. You know, it makes it an awfully tough Sunday afternoon. Ultimately, we probably do end up a game short. But the teams in front of us right now, a lot of them have to play each other, and a lot of them are just not very good teams. Then the thing about that is, I think they'll end up beating each other, but also winning against each other. That winning against each other enough to just hold off the Dolphins, which it just doesn't seem fair. Do you know what I mean? But you know, we put ourselves in this terrible position. Like the, you know, if the Dolphins miss out by a game, they've got no one to blame but themselves. But there's some bad teams ahead of them. You know, I still don't think the Colts are a great team. They're just as capable of winning a lot of games as losing a couple of, as losing them. The Raiders, you know, the Raiders could go either way. You know, you lose to Washington at the weekend. I didn't think they were a great team even at the start of the season, but with everything they've gone through, you know, they are a team trending in the wrong direction generally. So yeah, I mean, I think there's opportunities. But of course, it's all predicated on the Dolphins winning.
You mentioned Devontae Parker coming back before the bye. Obviously, the bye gives an extra week. And the big question is, will Fuller play?
So,
did you see what I did there?
I did, yeah. Yeah. Lee didn't know.
Lee didn't quite. Lee's still working on Miami time here. I think ultimately they get him back for a couple of games. Whether it's the week after the bye, I don't know. I don't know how much I can say. I was told something whilst I was in the press box, and that injury was far more severe than we were first led to believe. Oh, I mean, that's obvious because he's still not playing. But, you know, he opted for a treatment route to try and get back on the field. And I think that's something important to note, because I think there's a general feeling that Will Fuller's not fussed if he doesn't play. And I think that was born of the Dolphins being bad at the time. But I do believe that when Will Fuller got hurt, Will Fuller was trying to make something out of an absolutely awfully thrown ball by Jacoby Brissett. And that's what caused the injury. You know, that ball was on the ground before it ever got to him. And he broke a finger trying to go and get it. If he hadn't, we would have been complaining about his effort. But I think, you know, he got hurt trying to make a play. And now, from what I've been told, everything he's doing is to try and get back on the field. So, I mean, again, this is another reason I think we have a chance, is because we're potentially getting better. After winning four consecutive games, we got Devontae Parker back. We could still get Will Fuller back. And then hopefully Philip Lindsay is healthy enough to provide some sort of spark as well, because I actually like the way he played in the Panthers game. I also like the way Duke Johnson played, which is weird because he's kind of disappeared again since. But, you know, I'd love to see Philip Lindsay play again, because I thought he really ran. He ran with some desire. And I thought the way he spoke about his job in terms of protecting Tua, I mean, Brian Flores must have been gushing over that, because that's right up his street, a running back that knows that he's like, a huge part of his job is protection of the quarterback, not just carrying the ball.
What I'm looking forward to is, and I don't think we've seen it at all this season, with Waddle, Gesicki, Parker, Fuller, Wilson, all of them being on the field at the same time, or at least active. I know it's not possible to have them all on the field at the same time, but you get the idea of having a wide receiver core or receiving core with all of those guys playing at once. And for them to for that to happen in the remaining games of the season will give those teams who have studied the Dolphins something different to think about. Clearly, Waddles and Gesicki are the two mainstays of that offense, but you get the other guys back, then again, have to think of something else.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? It's all very interesting to see how it's going to finish, to be honest. I think like, with Fuller particularly, my opinion is that he's going to want to come back because he's not going to get paid very much next year if he doesn't come back and at least put in a couple of decent performances towards the end of the season, isn't it? I mean, there's no way a team is paying him what we've paid him this year to do nothing. That puts him up to like 32, doesn't it? Is it 32 he's going to be next year? He's getting on a bit, isn't he? So I think that's, he's going to be really pushing contracts unless he can come back and have a couple of decent games. So,
and also the most likely team to pay him is going to be us. And we have a bunch of cap space. He's 27, so he'll be 28 next year.
I thought he was older than that, my bad. But no, I think we'll touch him again, will we? Like, there's no way that this front office is going to pay him that money again.
But if he wants to earn money, the best way to do it is to prove it to the guys with the with the biggest checks to write, you know, and we could be one of those teams. I'm not saying we should do it or that we do it, but, you know, hey, his easiest route to get it is with the team that he's currently on.
Yeah. Exactly. All good then. Well, there's no game to do predictions for. I suppose we could quickly do an end of show game ball, couldn't we? As soon as we were at the game. Si, go on, lead us off with your game ball against the Giants, and we'll wrap it up after this.
The week before against the Panthers, I was torn between Waddle and Jalen Phillips, and I gave it to Waddle because he had that outstanding performance. And again, as he did against the Giants, he was their top receiver again. But I'm going to give it to Jalen Phillips for breaking the rookie sack record for the Dolphins, who's now on 8.5 for the season. People are talking about Micah Parsons being the defensive player of the year, or at least the defensive rookie player of the year. But Jalen Phillips has got to be running him close now for that, if he's not going to exceed him. I think he's been absolutely outstanding the last few weeks, and he certainly deserves my game ball this week.
So, Lee?
I'm going to go the other way and go Jalen Waddle, because Jalen Waddle is absolutely outstanding. To be honest, I think he has a better chance of winning Offensive Rookie of the Year, because I think he's playing incredible football. I'd be honest, I don't think anyone on this team wins one of those awards, because I think Dolphins aren't sexy enough for that. I think Micah Parsons had this wrapped up way earlier in the season, which isn't right, but it just seems to be the way it pans out. And also, I think Tua's just playing some exceptional football. Like, I'm going to give him a game ball every week he keeps up this accuracy, because that's sort of the last time the Dolphins won an AFC East title was when they had a guy who at the time held the record for being the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. Guess what? The Dolphins are on a 5-game win streak with a guy who is absolutely deadly accurate. I don't think it's a coincidence. And I think, you know, we're seeing kind of what we wanted at the beginning of the season, what we touched on with Daniel. You know, is this a guy to build around? Yeah, let's build a wall in the offseason.
Just before Andy gives his game ball of the week, I just wonder, is it too far-fetched to think about the likes of Tua, Waddle, Phillips to make the Pro Bowl? Is that too premature? Do you think they've got a realistic chance?
I think Waddle could, out of those guys. I think the other two probably got, like, you know, better candidates ahead of them, or more popular candidates ahead of them, should we put it that way, in terms of the Pro Bowl. But I think Waddle good, the way Waddle's playing. A lot of people who play fantasy football will be loving him in PPR format because it's eight, you know, if you get point per reception, he's getting 8 points for you at least every game, is at the moment. So very impressive. But with Tua, I think it's not too little too late. It's working for us. But, you know, Brady and Kuro, and, you know, name any AFC quarterback. People like Derek Carr and stuff have had probably more prominent years than him, even if they're around the same level of quarterback.
So accurate, not sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're getting good on the pun game, though, Randy. You said two a little too late.
No, mate. That's a pleasure, mate.
That's how tired you are, isn't it? That's what it is.
I can't replicate you, Si. I don't do it deliberately.
I've got to be honest. I think Javon Holland actually has a good shot at making the Pro Bowl because I think he almost has a Tua-style following on social media of people that are absolutely in love with him. I've got no problem with it. It's just not just an observation. And right now, he couldn't do anything wrong. I just think that, you know, that's what you need to get to a Pro Bowl because it's just popularity.
Funny enough, I saw today, we'll let you give your game ball in a minute, Andy.
Yeah, thanks.
I saw today a clip, somebody had put a montage on Twitter. I can't remember who it was, unfortunately, otherwise I'd give them credit. But somebody put, or it might have been Instagram, a sort of highlight reel of Javon Holland. And at the start of it was the moment when he got drafted by the Dolphins and he was sat in his house on his sofa with his family and friends around him. And it was deadly quiet. And he says, "I'm going to Miami," and the whole place erupted, and he just looked so happy, and everyone was really chuffed for him, and that's carried through onto the field and throughout his performances. He just seems to love playing football, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a hell of a player, isn't he? I'm definitely one of those fan guys on Twitter, which it makes me happy every time I make some play. My game ball going to Xavier and Howard, because I thought he stepped up that huge play, and also couple of really important pass breakups as well down the stretch as the game was still in the balance, so to speak. So, yeah, it was another important performance by X. And Sophie kind of looked up and at that moment and was wondering where everyone was on their feet, because Sophie spent most of the game engrossed in her phone and the chips. she did watch the first two snaps and said, "Let me guess what's going to happen here." And when she got them both wrong, she stopped watching. So, when X made the pick off, and I was on my feet, other people on the feet, she was like, "Oh, that was good." I was like, "Yeah, that's probably our best player. He's very good." So, yeah, there you go. Very, very good performance by X again and the Dolphins defense as a whole. So,
did Sophie have her wonder of the stadium like she did? Like she used to. Yeah, what did she think?
Somebody coughed like right in her face, which was very annoying. So she came back. She wasn't very happy about that. So but she did one lap. She just likes looking out of the view from the third tier that is great over the surrounding area, isn't it? Obviously, there's not a lot of, you know, tall buildings. It's not in the middle of Chicago, like, you know, the Bears Stadium or something. So you're not surrounded by those kind of buildings. But the skyline, nonetheless, is impressive at the distance. And you can make out the sea one way, the Everglades the other, and everything in between. So very good.
It's a few pipes area. The other way.
Yeah, a few yeah. pipes on Hollywood Beach. Don't stay at the Sun Beach Inn. There you go. The Sun Beach Inn is not the place to stay. I even left my first negative kind of TripAdvisor review today. I felt that strongly. So there you go. Two tips for you. Don't eat yellow snow. Don't stay at the Sun Beach Inn. And we'll finish there.